What's going on, my people? You're listening to The Score, an urban music education podcast hosted by Eric and Justin, where we discuss tips and strategies on how to become a more effective, compassionate, and culturally responsive music educator. What's going on, my people? This is Eric.
And this is Justin.
And we're your hosts for
The Score.
Welcome to episode 54, A Case for Humanity, Humanizing Yourself and Your Students for the Enhancement of Your Musical Programs. Interview with Balaji Isiba. What's up, bro? How you doing?
I'm good, man. What's up, guys? It's a pleasure to be on here, man.
We have to mention, right, Justin, that we're bringing back our very first guest that we had at the interview, and
that's crazy, man. Like, I didn't even know. Like, I didn't know I was your first guest. It's an honor to be your first guest, and just to be.
It's
back
a throwback
home.
Episode, baby. It's
a, you know what I'm saying?
Throwback.
We gotta
throwback, man.
Just a little bit.
Let's go. And,
for the people that don't know, Balaji is my former coworker, classmate from Prairie View, my crab brother, frat brother. At the same time, right now is working with Justin at Fort Bend ISD. But let's hear from you, bro. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your educational background, and what you're doing now?
Yeah, man. I am a product of Houston, Texas, Southwest Houston, Texas, to be the specific. My schooling is in HISD. I went to school in HISD, going to Welch Middle School, Westbury High School. I graduated from the Prairie View A&M University. And you know, I think something specific, and maybe I mentioned this the last time, I didn't go the typical route of band. Like, you know, my high school band experience was not, one of, you know, regular Texas UIL, you know, going to concert and all of that. Mine was more of a traditional, like, marching band HBU style. I find myself, you know, teaching in the world of Texas band, you know, and just, you know, in the confines of just UIL solo and ensemble and all of those things. I am in my 8th year of teaching, 10th year. All right. I did 2 years at an elementary where I actually started a band program my second year. I then moved to Fonville Middle School, which is my first gig where I kind of started a program from scratch. And then got to work with you guys being your feeder program at Hamilton Middle School, where I was
good
able
times,
to,
man. Good times.
Right. Good times,
indeed,
man.
Indeed.
I was able to come alongside and just, you know, help build upon the culture that Justin set at the school, which is amazing, which made my life, you know, a little easier. And now it's crazy, man. Glory be to God that I'm working with Justin again. And it's crazy how we are all working with each other somehow.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it truly is, man. I think that, and not to interrupt your origin story, but I think what a lot of people, when we talk to people about their careers and ours, we really forget how we've just, man, our story is not like most. The fact that you actually get to work with people that not only that you went to college with, but that you actually enjoy being around. Like, there is a sense of community and likability and care that makes the job, with all the stress and the strain and the frustration, it makes it more enjoyable. It makes it easier. And I wouldn't have it any other way, man, to be this far in the game and to have worked with people where I don't have horror stories of having horrible, you know, partners in the workplace. So, no, it's truly been a blessing, man, to work with both of you guys.
Yeah, most definitely, man.
So you, as we let all our guests, you chose the title for this episode. And I want you to really, really dig into this, because A Case for Humanity, Humanizing Yourself and Your Students for the Enhancement of Your Musical Program. And given when people see the artwork, you kind of showed a different side of you that most, you know, music educators might not want to do. So what's that about? Tell us about it.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, I speak on the artwork, you know, the artwork, just came from a post that I put on Instagram probably like last week. I'm not like real huge on social media, like y'all know that, but I think I don't know, in the past couple of weeks, like I've just been wanting to share who I am. You know, I think a lot of it has been inspired by Toby Nwigwe. You know, if y'all know him, you know, like he is all about purpose, and he's from the southwest side of Houston, Texas. And every time he introduces himself, he says, "I am from the southwest side of Houston, Texas." Mm. He states his name and he says who he is, and he's unapologetically who he is. Like, he doesn't care. Yeah, he is his self. And you know, I'm getting to a point of my life, like, I'm gonna be who I am. You're gonna like it or you're not gonna like it, and you should like it because the vibes that I give are great. All right.
Yeah.
So that's what the picture is about. If I talk about the Case for Humanity, so you know, recently I had an epiphany about the power of students seeing me as a human being and seeing the students as human beings in my classroom setting. You know, I kid you not, some of the most enjoyable times I had as a director is when I'm just talking to kids about my life, learning about their life, just telling them about my story, what I've been through in this world. And I think right now, also in the setting that I teach in, it's very important to do this. And I feel like it has lasting effects, which will be amazing for our students and us as educators. You know, one of the best teaching years was my second year at my first middle school. You know, I remember spending 2 weeks just doing no musical stuff. And, you know, we had block schedule, so it was about 5 days. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but I was just doing social emotional learning. You know, I went over the bottom line. Y'all remember that poem? I got it from you, actually, Eric. I remember coming to a drum major trial and you had your drum majors recite that poem.
I can't take credit for it. That's Tim Richardson. That was all Tim. Yeah.
Man, and I remember
shout
hearing,
out to Tim.
Yeah, shout out to Tim, the band whisperer.
Yes, sir.
But no, like I remember hearing those kids spit that, and it just like hit me. I'm like, ooh, this poem is real. We should like actually like put it up, you know, as a reference for people to see.
Will do.
I remember just going over it and like breaking it down verse by verse and having them apply those verses to situations in their lives and applying it to my situation just so they can get a better understanding. Like, I kid you not, I even remember telling the kids that I love them. Like, I said that on a fundamental level as human beings, I was like, man, I love y'all. And, you know, I remember starting off the class like on the first day, just telling them, like, you are now my adopted kids because you're placed in band. Like, you are now my adopted kids. Now, mind you, 98% of my students came from Latin origins, you know. And the crazy thing is that the core of those kids became the first group that I took on stage and got ones with at UIL. Mm-hmm. And that's not even the killer part. I kid you not, I can show a picture. I only had 16 kids on stage at UIL. How unconventional is that? You know, and I was reflecting the other day. I was like, man, like, I think the reason why that happened is because the way I started off that year, like, I did not talk to them about music for 2 weeks straight. Like, we talked about life. I just told them how much their parents cared about them. I was like, you need to go home and tell your parents that you love them because they work hard for you. Like, I was just pouring into those kids. And a lot of it just came from me over the summer. Just really like, I think I was just like really in my word and just asking God, like, hey, like, how can I like really impact these students? And that just carried into the first day and it just like went, you know? And I'll speak upon that more later, if I can. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like, some of my best moments were when I was doing social emotional learning, you know? And this year was like, I went back to that in the beginning because, like, we're not doing anything with instruments right now, especially like when we first came back, nobody knew what we were doing, you know? So I just spent a lot of time asking kids questions, getting into the students' lives, and they were engaging and it was like real fulfilling. You know, I actually had an advisory class of non-band students, you know, eighth graders, non-band students, where I was able to just talk to them about my marriage, talk to them about me being a father and just related to their lives. And like in the beginning, they weren't feeling it at all. They were like, why? What is going on? This is weird. But I kid you not, by the second and third week, man, we were having mental check-ins. Like, kids were being vulnerable with each other. They were being vulnerable with me. And, you know, we had to end up moving face to face. And I had to leave that class just because they changed schedules around. And the kids were sad, you know, because they found a safe place where both an adult and other students saw them as a human. And we were able to identify with each other, you know, and not looking at it we're able to identify with each other, you know, and because we're able to look at each other through the lens of humanity and not looking at each other like, oh, this is a young black man who's speaking to mostly Latino students or, you know, whatever other labels that you want to put on that. We just simply seen each other as human beings. And I think sometimes and a lot of times students don't have an adult that they feel like they can identify with and be open with because adults in their lives aren't being vulnerable enough with them and bringing those students into mm-hmm. their lives for whatever reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you just said a whole bunch, and if we had an offer play, we pass it around. But I think one of the things that sticks out to me is just the aspect of when you say that, you know, when you were at Farmville, that you told those kids that you love them. Of course, as an educator, and I'm sure people, well, you know, listen to this. Oh man, that's just so scary.
Right.
But at the end of the day, whether you want to believe it or not, and this is just a true testament that we can all subscribe to, is that you're going to find yourself, if you are truly invested in this and you are truly trying to build your students, you have no choice but to eventually fall into a place of deep compassion and care for the very students that you teach.
Yeah.
Right. We have the opportunity of seeing kids grow up in front of our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mr. Asiba just had a former student of his who's now a college student come in and speak to our seventh graders as we're trying to prepare them to be better leaders and really take the organization, the band program by the reins and really run with it. And that's just a clear example that she saw Mr. Asiba as this human being that she could connect to, that she's a freshman in college.
Sophomore.
And it's still like, yeah, Mr. Asiba, if you need me to come, sophomore in college, if you need me to come speak, yeah. And that's a prime example. I know, Eric, you can speak to it. I know I can speak to it, that we had to kind of put aside the very rhetoric of band pedagogy. Not that we don't believe in it, that not that we don't subscribe to that as the standard and the expectation in our room, but I just believe that those things are going to make the most of themselves if you spend time really seeing kids and letting them know, at the end of the day, I have a job and you have a position, but I'm still just a man, right? Yeah. I'm an adult that's trying to help you. I'm an adult that cares about your well-being. I'm an adult that hurts. I'm an adult that goes through issues. I'm an adult that deals with the pain of life no different than you do. Now, we may be in different spectrums of life. You are a child trying to find out, maneuver, identify, really find out who you are. I'm an adult that, if we just be honest, is still trying to figure out who am I, how do I fare in this world? Who am I? You know what I'm saying?
And so I think
when kids see that, they now can trust you more when you're trying to pull the most out of them musically. When kids see that, they're going to be more apt to have a con. Like, I just got off my class. I told Asiba this. We ended class Friday, my fourth period beginner percussion class. That whole class just gave me life. Like, literally. Like, we finished going through our last, you know, kind of playoff test. And we was on there talking about what's happening for spring break, what football seat. Like, it just became a whole thing. And they were like, hey, Mr. McLean, have a great break. Can't wait to see you when we get back. And that's not necessarily because I'm cracking the whip on percussion pedagogy, you know. It's more so the fact that I'm like, hey, what's going on in your lives? You know, I'm hey, grandma in the background that's walking behind you while you're trying to learn. And so it's understanding that we shouldn't compartmentalize these things of me being an educator and me being a person, because then it's not authentic. That's ultimately what it is, that the kids see us as something as fake and not something as real.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the identity that we have subscribed to of a band director.
Yeah.
That mold of being stoic, the unapproachable sometimes, the person who barks the commands and the band falls in line. Mm-hmm. That model that at times, when you do hear about those phenomenal and outstanding music educators, is because they humanized themselves. Mm. They created those opportunities the same way that you're doing, that both of y'all have just spoken about. But to do that, it's not easy, because I remember, you know, giving suggestions to music educators when I gave that presentation at TMEA to just do a neighborhood tour You know, the way that students get shocked when they see you in the grocery store, you know, and so I'm not saying to live within the community of your school if that's not what you want to do, but right. what would it look like to at least make yourself present to community events, to visiting local restaurants that you know that either some of your band parents or music parents own or frequent or work at or et cetera. And then students get to see a side of you that humanizes themselves. And that alone might not require much out of you. You don't have to share personal stuff. You don't have to share, because there are some people that, you know, when y'all mention that, they're going to be like, I'm not telling them about my life. They don't deserve that. But we have seen the positive aspects of that, of allowing students to know, where I have been open and sat on the podium and said, hey, I'm not feeling it today. I'm not all here. But I am going to do my best to give you, you know, and I will be present to that. I would acknowledge that. And when students see that, when they expect you to be the one that has it all together, that you can give yourself some grace and them as well, whenever those situations do come up. And then, like y'all both mentioned, you can pull out of them way more some musical stuff that, you know, that might have never happened if you don't even know their name. So, you know, the first step is to is to acknowledge the fact that we are human. I think one of the things that has been a reoccurring theme right now is to stop glorifying being the last one to leave school campus, putting the most amount of hours like it's a badge of honor, and instead let's do what we're paid to do and do it at a high level and an efficient level. But I think this concept of humanization of teachers with students is so key for the future of education, not just music education, but education as a whole, is taking this approach and how can we expand on it? Because I think we've all three of us have been able and fortunate enough to see the fruits of our labor in a sense of the relationship building that we've had with students. Just today, I saw one of my former Davis Northside High School students graduating from Texas A&M. Yeah. You know, I'm like, this is what it's about. This is, you know, I was like, I remember teaching you in the summer camp, my first year teaching, when you were just I think she was a sixth grader, you know? And so all that to say, I love this approach and I hope most people will subscribe to it or be open to say, I'm not ready to tell them that, you know, I got a fiance or that I got, you know, special someone at home, or I don't want to talk about my kids in front of them. Cause I've heard about that where the students are like, wait, you have kids? Like what? How do I not know you have kids?
I do.
You know? And so, and I will always talk about my family, my kids. I bring them up. I bring it into the lesson somehow. I talk about relationships. I talk about, you know, and I think one of the things that I really love that I wanted to mention, that because I know of the experience within a recent immigrant family, specifically of Latino culture, that the term "I love you" is not often said sometimes in homes.
Right.
It's because at times our parents didn't have that. And so this is generational thing that occurs, that we show love through different ways, through food, through, you know, anything you can think of except the actual words. And for you to say that, I know it caught some of those students off guard. Like, wait a minute, my mama doesn't even tell me that, you know, and for you to encourage them to go home and say, hey, acknowledge the work that they're doing. If they have two or three jobs, it's not because they don't love you. Quite the contrary, they love you even more because they want to make sure you always go with everything you need and not necessarily what you want and all those kind of things. And I had to redirect some of those conversations for some of my students where they would say, my parents don't care about me. They're not at my concert. And I'm like, what are they doing? Well, they're working. Okay, well, we're here for you.
Right.
And we don't take that as a sign as that they don't care. Quite the contrary. We have a recording. Go home and sit down and even share that with them. It might be different. It might be unorthodox. It might not be what your friends are doing. Right. But you can at least share this experience. So I wanted to culminate all of that summary, man, because that really resonated with me, bro. That was outstanding.
Yeah, no. And, you know, it's hard, man, because, you know, I tell you straight up, like, you know, at the point in which we started to realizing, like, all right, this is our new normal with online band, and we're going to have to teach online. I started to get away from, you know, getting into the kids' lives, and it started turning into, why aren't you turning these assignments? Hey, I don't have your assignments. Just like I think Jesse said on you guys' podcast a few weeks back. And then Justin said something that was so true. I mean, if we think about it in the grand scheme of things, only 5 to 10% of our kids are actually going to go into something that's music related. Yeah. So especially, I think in this time right now, why not take advantage of the opportunity to pour into your kids, like in a deep level, when the constraints of like, you know, UIL, they're not breathing down your neck, you know? Mm. And for some people, they're like, oh, I want to go, I got to go. And that's fine. But, you know, if we're just being honest, at least from my knowledge, from what I've seen, like even just showing up to these UIL events right now are getting you ones, just showing up.
Facts.
You know, and
don't get it twisted.
This is and I'm not saying that people aren't working hard, right, and your bands aren't sounding good. But I'll be honest, like some of my kids, they went to solo and ensemble, and I listened to some of the stuff that they did. I was like, that does not deserve a one. This is a COVID one. Just being way 100, you know.
COVID so, ones.
This was a COVID one because what? If I was a judge, you were
you
not
still
getting
got
one.
That three. You just got that three for me.
I got to bring this up though, man, because I am critical of obviously of all those systems. How come? You know, and we're present that there's hardships present for all students, right? Across the state, right?
Let me mute my mic.
How come those same sentiments weren't present from when we had those hardships pre-COVID?
Right.
When we had a $0 budget, when we didn't have the tuxes, how come those things aren't taken into account? I'm just saying.
We are just getting a following, Eric, and we don't need to be walking down this road.
Look, okay? Y'all need your coins.
I'm gonna tell you why. Because it's hard. Everybody becomes human when it affects everybody.
That's real.
Everybody becomes a human when it affects everybody. And so what we're seeing is whether you are from a upper echelon district, a well-to-do or middle of the road, whatever, we all dealing with the same things.
Your kids
are not at school. Your kids are not engaged. They're not really practicing. You do have a group of kids that are there and still locked in. And so now we all in the same boat. But the truth of the matter is we always all been in the same boat.
That's good. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so being human, being real and being authentic shouldn't be something that we do because of our environment. I think a lot of times when we talk about it, it kind of gets tossed in this world of like, oh, well, you know, you teach in those environments and a lot of the. No, man, I don't care if you come from two parent household, single parent. Well, I don't care. We are community based people.
Yeah.
You know, we're literally in a environment and an occupation where we're building a community where we want students to trust each other in the midst of a performance. We talk about bringing life to the piece and making the piece, you know, walk and make it have features and making it tell a story, but we're unwilling to do the very things that we're trying to get out of the music.
Yeah.
And so that's good. So when Asiba talks about this, when he speaks on this, I'm looking at it firsthand of him going to, you know, the deepest extremes of letting kids know, like, I'm you, I hurt, I have issues. I came to work today and I was tired too. I'm actually tired right now, but I'm gonna find the energy for us to push through and make the most of this rehearsal in this class period.
Yes, sir.
And that's just being human. So now the student is put in a position of like, oh, well, I guess I don't really have no reason to sit here and not be engaged. I mean, I guess if he's an adult and he's doing it, I got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so being a human and showing that in the teaching space is something that we have to be intentional about, because I think we all go into our occupation like, okay, I'm a teacher, I need to talk like this, and we get concerned about how is this lesson gonna flow out today. We gotta work through scales and I really need to work on this tone quality. So okay, I need to say these words, I need to do that. And we get so caught up in trying to get information to them that we forget that, okay, it's two worlds that we can use to create this. I can use the world of the academy, which we all need to be tapping into.
Yes,
but
sir.
Then who I am as a person, why do I leave that at the door? Why do I leave that, you know, the kids don't. The kids come in and they're going to be who they're going to be,
right?
Whether you playing a pep band piece or you trying to work through, you know, this A section of your UIL concert piece. And it's a super serious piece. They're
right.
Going to raise their hand and be like, man, this kind of remind me of this Young Boy song I listened to. And it's like,
right.
We're tuning chords right now. Why are you even, right? And why are you listening to that?
Right. First question, why are you listening to that?
As we take a break from our discussion,
We're jumping into the segment called In Rotation. During this time, each of us will get an opportunity to share what we're currently listening to. Favorite artists, genre, album, playlist. If you have any recommendations, drop us a line on our social media platforms at PodTheScore or send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you. In rotation, folks. All right, so I got put onto this band by my kind of one of those autoplay on my NPR Tiny Desks on YouTube. And I'm going to shout out Lake Street Dive. Their newest album is called Obviously, but I want to specifically talk about Hypotheticals. They have two tracks on there. They have the first one called Hypotheticals and the second one that's an edit version. So check that out. That's Lake Street Dive Hypotheticals. Justin, what you got for us?
All right. So this is what my week consisted of this past week. I watched the All-Star game. And I also got a chance to watch the new Coming to America movie, right? And in both of those instances, I saw a person that I grew up on, well, that my grandparents and my family introduced me to, Gladys Knight. So Gladys Knight sang the national anthem for the All-Star game and sounded amazing. And she was in Coming to America, and they basically rewrote Midnight Train to Georgia for
they
the
did
movie.
That. They did that.
So I was like, yo, Gladys is still out here killing it. And so it just made me pull up her greatest hits. One of my favorite songs by Gladys Knight was Say the Overtime for Me. It's a really dope song. It's kind of it's in the 80s where, you know, most people would think that her career would be on the downward end, but she found a record and it's called Save the Overtime for Me. Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Nice, nice. I actually binged the original Coming to America. Then I backdoored it with a new one, man. And
hey.
It was an awesome night. My wife even asked me. She was like, we're about to put on the new one. And she's like, we have to rewatch the first one. And so, I'm like, all right. And so we did. Bro, I'm so glad we did. And I love it because
to think,
and I have to credit, and I don't want to misspeak, but I believe Texas Southern University, which I'm giving them some credit, Prof. Sam Jackson was the first one to arrange the Jeffrey Joffre theme,
which
is now known as Coming to America, which is popularized by Drumline, the movie. But from my understanding, Texas Southern was one of the first HBCU-style bands to actually bring that tune to the stands, which has now become somewhat of a staple.
Standard
within HBCU culture. So, but if you've never realized that that's actually the theme to the king coming in, check that out. And then the TSU version even has the trills and everything just the same way the arrangement comes out. So, but cool, man. Balaji, what you got for us?
So what do I have? So I would be in rotation with Toby Nwigwe's Wake Up Everybody, his rendition of that. But I think you did that like 2 weeks ago.
I did.
I'm just putting that out there again.
We love him here.
Listen
on this
to
station.
It, man. But I am listening to Chance the Rapper, The Heart and the Tongue. If you have not heard that track, please listen to it.
Because Chance back out here in these streets.
He's out there and listen to it, man. He's talking about the heart and the tongue. Those are the two most important things, because out of the heart, I don't want to misquote this scripture. I know, Justin, you got to give it to me, Reverend. Out of the heart, out of the abundance of the heart, what?
Flows.
Yeah, it flows from your mouth, all right? So those words flow from your mouth. So whatever's coming from your mouth is ultimately what's in your heart, all right?
Being invested in your heart, yep.
Yes, man, so please listen to that. It's
in rotation, nice. Baptist Church, ladies and gentlemen. We on here, and you're going to get a little bit of everything when we get on here.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're back. So, Balaji, you've been talking about humanizing both the teacher and the students, but you threw in there about humanizing parents.
Yeah.
I want you to talk about that a little bit. How have you approached that within your teaching practices?
Yeah. And I think this year was like the year where it's like really struck with me. I think we have to understand, especially if we work in an urban setting, we're probably working with marginalized families. Who work harder to stay afloat, which tires them out as a parent. And sometimes that doesn't allow them or doesn't allow students to have experiences at home. So sometimes students lack the exposure of being able to have deep conversations with an adult or other things that you can think of. So I'm going to put this into the concept of the band world, because I thought about this the other night. All right. So I previously worked in a marginalized school district, which had a marginalized fine arts department, which was very underfunded. All right. I had pretty much no resources. Okay. So As a band director, I had a program of like 190 plus students with no assistant at one time, no budget, not a lot of parental support, school leadership support, like scheduling, like anything you can think of. And yes, I did work very hard to get parents out. You know, like I remember, no lie, I'm very unorthodox, y'all. Like I got on my knees one day, like asking these kids, like, hey, I need your help. Like, I'm just unorthodox. I'm going to put it out there. Y'all see how vulnerable I'm with you? Like, I'm vulnerable like this with my students. I'm just, it is what it is. This is what you get. All right. So, so I also, at the same time, I was trying to prove to other districts that this young black man was capable of teaching in your district. Mm-hmm. So I worked very hard at trying to get ones at UIL. All right. Because this is the first thing that they look at when judging your success as a band director. And I'm guilty of it myself. All right. So it is what it is. But because of all that I worked for, all right, and so I put this in perspective. Like, I think this year is my seventh year teaching middle school band. Last year was my first year being able to go to solo and ensemble, all right? And now, did I want to go before? Yes. Did I know the benefits? Yes. But did I have enough manpower to help me? No. Like, I could have killed myself even more to do that. And there's always more that you can do at the same time. But at the same time, like, I'm a human being. So I had to sacrifice something. All right. And I think that's the same thing that parents do. Like, my wife is in education, too. And we have these conversations. Like, parents care about their kids' education. They just, they're maxed out. And I can even, like I'm a teacher. Me and my, it's me and my wife. And I have one daughter. And, like, I'm maxed out.
Yeah.
So I can imagine just, and we're pretty good. Like, foundationally, we're good. Money, like, everything. Like, we're good. So I can only imagine, you know, like, and this came from me, like, calling parents, just saying, hey, like, your kid is not turning in anything. I remember a parent called me, say, hey, like, my I just got through typing up this document for my husband's job because they're firing him, and like, yeah, like we sit him down on the computer, but he just doesn't do it. He like moves to YouTube, and it's just a lot, you know. And so I think we gotta think about that sometimes, and not saying that that parents shouldn't take ownership. Yes, they should, because me and Justin, we had these conversations all the time. We like, hey,
yeah, for like, sure.
It's just like parents just aren't making that a priority, and I can understand why. It's just a lot, you know. Like, you got to be really intentional and on top of your game to be a parent and cover all bases. Like, you have to.
And I think, I think when you say this, and you really helped me get this, because I'm very much like, yo, man, you need to. I didn't send emails. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah, you don't care. You don't care. You don't care about your child. You know, and go into this deep spill. But what you helped me see was that, no, there is a degree of care, but the same grace that we would want extended to us if we made a mistake, or if we did something that moved too fast, or we misread a student, we need to be willing to give that out to the parents, because we don't understand everybody's situation, right? And in the midst of a pandemic and all the stuff that we're going through, are we truly getting to the root of things? And maybe it's better to help push kids along until they can connect and kind of see what we're doing for them in the classroom. And I think the parents are more appreciative of that. And it showed, because I ended up talking to a parent for a student. We actually got on the call, and she was just confused about everything that was going on. And I started kind of laying things out, and she told me their things that they were going through, as far as like, hey, we're in a pandemic. One of my child, you know, I have a child here that can't have access to all of the things out in the world. So we're trying to keep everybody in-house right now to keep everybody safe. And it's a lot. I'm working from home. I'm teaching my, and it just became very clear. It's like, okay, I get it. I get it. You're juggling just as much as we're juggling in the classroom, but we have to learn how to say that person became very vulnerable with me in a moment that they didn't necessarily have to, you know? And what am I doing on the back end to show appreciation, but at the same time show them that I see them and that I truly care, and understanding that parents have different roles in the band program. We got some parents that's going to be like, hey, I can pull up, I can give, I can do this. And then you got some parents that's just like, man, I'm going to make sure my child is where they need to be. And all we can do is be thankful for that and figure out how to work with and further help those people help us. Because at the end of the day, with their children are the reason we have a opportunity to do what we love. So no, that's really good, man. That's really good.
Empathize.
The fact that you take that, yeah, for sure.
All of this that I'm hearing from y'all is to have empathy for ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
That you have to be present to other people's situation, and you don't fully need to know. You get what I'm saying? They even get the opportunity to not have to share that they're going through hardships. It's just, hey, I'm going through a lot right now, and I'll do my best to get my kid there. And I can also think of parents that have been hesitant to speak up because they don't feel they have a place to. And then you have the opposite. Mm. You have a parent who will ask for your lesson plan so they can have it as well, and everything in the middle. And for us to be cognizant of how to navigate all of those types of parents, but to be empathetic to every single person's situation, and just to be aware, it's just a saying like, hey, is there anything I can help you with? Is there a communication lapse on my part? It's taking ownership in some of the things that you can take and expand on. One of the things that I love that we were able to do at Heights, the first year, students weren't paying their fees, and their fees were mostly things that they were keeping, you know, whether it be their marching shoes or you know, the shirts for the show. And so one of the conversation was that of our students don't pay. And I was like, no, we can change that culture. We can change that. But are we meeting them with systems and approaches that can be, you know, beneficial for them? And one of the things we implemented was a payment plan. It was like, hey, check here if you can't pay right now, and we'll put you on a payment plan. Here are the due dates. And the parents paid. The majority of the students started paying, and it wasn't because they didn't have the money. Some of them would wait until income tax return or a bonus in their work or what have you. But even just that simple process of making things attainable instead of, hey, I don't have enough money to pay for this rental, this instrument, you got to go join something else. Oh, no, they're going to work with me. And even if they couldn't pay, we found a way to still have them be involved.
Yeah.
And so I think the empathetic approach for everything, for whether it be fees, school assignments, practice attendance, transportation issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of things that we see as challenges within our context of teaching, we can redirect that. We can find solutions for that. Mm-hmm. We can create carpools. We can create fundraisers that are specifically designated for the fees for students to participate, et cetera. I think this is where we have to be proactive in that and stop making excuses. Yeah. I mean, that's just being real.
Yes.
We have to get to that place instead of, kids in this neighborhood, they'll never pay. They don't care. Their parents don't care about their education. And we all know that to be false. Now, are there some parents that don't know how to care? Yes. Like that's just part of being human. You know what I mean? It's like, my parents never talked to me about a higher education or what it is to be punctual or what it is to turn in my assignments because my parents dropped out, et cetera. But we can dispel all those narratives. I myself, it's although anecdotal, my mother only went to second grade, but she was the one that helped me to my academics, not my father with the master's degree, you know? And so we can bring a rebuttal to every argument, but the main point that we're bringing here to the table is be empathetic to everybody's situation.
Yes. And something just came to me, man, just to bring it into the band world and concept. You know, Mr. McLean is great with metaphors with the kids, but I don't know. I'm in the spirit right now, so he's giving it to me.
Come on now.
Catch it. it's just like this, just how like head focused on UIL and getting ones, and we neglect things that are important like social emotional learning. The same thing with the parents. Yeah. Like they get they're thinking about how am I going to pay this bill? Mm. How are we going to get this money? How are we going to do this? So stuff falls by the wayside. You know, I was just thinking the other day, man, it'll be so awesome, because I did this the other day. I just started calling parents and saying, hey, man, like, your kid is amazing. Like they, you know, in this climate of online learning, I got a couple of kids who's just always turning and stuff, always doing what they need to do. And I was like, man, let me call these parents real quick. And it was just like, you're doing such a good job as a parent for your kid to be so independent and doing what they're doing. I was like, man, why am I not doing more of this? Because I'm so focused on, on other things. So it's the same thing. And I feel like we just got to realize, like, sometimes parents are outnumbered and they're outmanned to compete in the confines, listen to this, of the structures and policies and whatever else that have been woven into the fabric of this society, people.
Yeah. Man, we need to pay you for today's episode.
Jeez. I told you I'm in the spirit, that's y'all. A whole I'm trying
word.
To tell you.
Yeah, man, that's a whole word. That is so true that we are all up against and we're all competing for something, whether to be approved, to be affirmed. And if this does not fall high on the totem pole, then it's probably going to get cast by the wayside, like you said, because it may not fit with helping me get to this place of respect, you know, or helping me get to this place where people are like, oh, okay, you actually do know what you're doing. And you said it. When we were trying to fit the mold of this UIL savant, where we were trying to get ones, we wanted to be respected because we felt like, well, we already went to an HBCU, that's strike one. I'm already teaching in an environment where I don't have funding and all that, that's strike two. You know, oboe player, I'm still trying to teach this guy how to play French horn, that's strike three. Right. So we're looking at all of these things that have us in a sense of debt, rather than saying, you know what, whether I get ones or whether I get a 2-2-1 or a 1-1-2, what's going to help me appreciate what I'm doing and help me appreciate what the kids are doing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think that's key. But I think in all of this, I think the other question that comes to mind and I want to pose to you is that, okay, you're giving this information about the being a human and showing your true self and being authentic in the classroom and then trying to meet parents where they are and understand their plight as much as we need to. But how can one be truly intentional with being that showing that the humanity in the classroom? How can they do that when maybe they may not be where they need to be? Like what happens on the back end to make sure that's not just a shot in the dark?
I got you. Yeah. And I'm going to get into that. I think you asked two questions. What I heard was, what does that look like? And then also, how do you get there as an individual? And so what that looks like is just things practical, like I talked about earlier, like discussing your childhood, if you're comfortable with this, discussing your, you know, family dynamic, you know, mistakes that you made. Mistakes you make in the classroom, model how to admit your mistakes. I remember being in Hamilton and just telling the kids, like, don't be ashamed to make mistakes. Like, I get on this podium every day and make mistakes, and y'all probably see it all the time. And I just make the mistake. I probably say, hey, I'm sorry. And I go right. And I just keep on teaching because you learn from your mistakes. All right. You know, talking about major issues that's happening in the world and how it affects the student's mental state and not feeding them your opinions, just listening to them. And just showing them that you care, okay? And, you know, hey, y'all, I'm very guilty of coming off as a robot. Like Mr. McLean would tell you, I grew up in a Nigerian household where there was not a lot of emotion, like, at all. It was like, hey, you do this, do what you're supposed to do. Hey, go to school, clean, make sure you're good. That's what I got a lot. And so, like, I can be a robot because I have a very high drive for success and a very high work ethic. And I can be on 10, like, all day nonstop. All right. And I can take the humanity out of my classroom. But at the same time, I've made a conscious effort to humanizing things, like just simple things like asking kids when they return from the weekend. I started off just asking them, like, what did y'all do over the weekend? And then I started getting a little bit more intentional. I was like, no, not what did you do over the weekend? What is it that you like to do that you got to do over the weekend? Then I went even further. I was like, who did you help this weekend? Because I'm trying to build people who are servants, you know, like, who did you help this weekend? Like, let me see who you are, you know. Right. But I also, and so those are good things, but I also think we must get past those simple things and go a little bit deeper. And in order to have more connectivity faster, that's the only way we're going to have connectivity faster. And it doesn't have to be anything. It doesn't have to take a long time. Just bring the students into your lives. And, you know, you can connect it with the things that you're working on in the music or the characteristics that you're trying to build in your students for the betterment of your band program and give them scenarios of how these things may play out in your lives. Mm. All right. And so, you know, and another example, like, I've told kids this, like, at my past school, like, you know, I remember telling them, like, hey, like, I had some goals, like, I wanted to, you know, read my Bible more because I say I'm a Christian. And I'll tell them, like, I'm not reading my Bible. I say I want to read my Bible, but I'm not actually reading my Bible. So ultimately, I'm lying to myself. And I would tell them, like, hey, like, if you're not practicing, if you're not practicing and you say you want to get better, you're lying to yourself. So, and I helped them realize that. Then I would kind of challenge them and say, hey, I want y'all to hold me accountable. Like, when y'all see me, ask me, like, hey, am I reading my Bible? And I'm going to hold you accountable and ask you, hey, are you practicing right now? And so, like, I humanized the situation. I got to identify with them, just let them know I'm trash in the area of my life, and it's okay. And I want you to help me be better in the same way that I'm trying to help you be better. All right. And even now I'm doing the same thing. I told them at the beginning of the year, like, I want to work out. And so I'm trying to teach them the principle of a little bit consistently goes a long way. So I'm telling them, hey, I need y'all to pick a warm up, and I need y'all to do that 4 days out of the week. And if you do that consistently over a month, I promise you, you're going to see results. And so I told them this. I'm like, you know what, y'all? Every period, I'm going to do 25 push-ups, like 5 days out of the week. Every day I see y'all. And I have a sign on my
poster. And I'm
here
to tell you that this is happening.
I got a sign on there that says, do your push-ups. And I told the kids, and I do the push-ups right there in class. And I told the kids, hey, remind me if I don't do my push-ups. And the same way I'm reminding you, I'm going to, same way you reminded me, I'm going to remind them. And I'm going above and beyond. Like, I've worked it out to where I know where all their lunches are. And every lunch period, I'm going to all my kids asking them, hey, have you practiced? Like, the principals, they see me. They even got to the point where they're like, hey, if you want to pull kids out and take them to your class, like, you can do that. Like, they see me there. And one kid asked me, like, why do you come here every day? And I said, I want you to answer that question. And one of the APs was like, because he cares. Like, cause I'm going in there.
Shout out to APs.
Shout out to Mr. Hodge. Anyway,
we
got four lunches. And so I just make it a point. It don't take me a long time. It take me like 5 minutes just to walk down there real quick and just identify the kids. Hey, and I try to lead by, hey, what did you enjoy this weekend first before I get down to the real business? What did you do? What did you do last night? What did you eat? Then I hit them with, did you practice? Oh, you need to practice. You can come in the morning and get your work done. Like, you know, like, you, if you want it, you can go out there and get it. All right. And I think it just brings me to this. In order to be able to do all of that, like, you got to be in a good place. Like, in order to tell kids, like, I love you, and, you know, just on a human level, not like, you know, not like a deep love, you know, but anything crazy, but just like on a human level, humanity level, or in order just to, like, be all out for your kids, like, you got to be in a good place. Y'all got to remember, we are made up of mind, body, and soul. If you are not, if you are not feeding your soul spiritually in whatever deity you believe in, if you are not mentally getting to a place where you have reflective time to be able to get your thoughts out, like having quiet time, and if you are not working on your physical body, you are not operating in your best self, and you are not going to be able to give to others at the level that you need to be able to give to others. And that's plain and simple.
Period. That is, I mean, yes to that. Because what happens is the very kids you teach become, they get injured by the crossfires of things that you haven't handled. You know, what is a normal formality in most of our classrooms of a kid not practicing or asking questions after you've, that they ask even after you have stated what you've already stated, because you haven't had that time to really work through, get thoughts out, deal with things. You're now taking that out on them. And so then what does that do to that child? It makes them shut down. And I tell my kids this all the time. I said, what happens in our classroom is that we don't have, as directors, as teachers, we don't have a big vacuum of opportunity to connect with you. Right. When we talk to most kids, most of the kids that have been in our, and me and Eric have this conversation with a lot of kids at Heights, they, that teacher that they don't like, that they usually, you know, oh, they racist, Mr. Jimenez. Oh, no, they don't really like me, Mr. McLean. It is one situation that has occurred that has now predicated the future of that student-teacher relationship. And so that's the depths of what you need to do on those weekends. When me and Eric, and we talk about leaving work at work and making sure that you leave space for you, it's not only that you are coming out better, but that you and the student come out better, because we get one opportunity to show them that we are not trustworthy. We get one opportunity to show them that, oh, you're not who you said you were. And that may not be fair, but we, at the end of the day, we're dealing with children. Right. We're not dealing with adults who can decipher. We're not dealing with somebody where Eric can be like, hey, man, you all right today? Are we dealing with a child who may be dealing with some of the very similar things in their home space? And so you being whole and being prepared to know how to react and how to interact goes a long way in the classroom. And I'm not even talking about anything musically.
Right.
I'm just talking about from the human perspective.
Mm. Yeah. And yeah, that's good.
So, Balaji, man, I am again, in awe of how much you and I had the fortunate pleasure of working together your first year officially teaching.
Right.
And even then, you weren't considered a full-time teacher, but you were operating as one. Right. The guy who went to go get his wisdom teeth taken out and then came back to work with slobber coming out the side of his mouth. That's a testament of who you are, and I'm honored to be your friend and hear the growth in who you are as an educator. The discussion we've had today has led me to just validate everything that I say about you and how you approach education, because you're not eliminating nor hiding your upbringing. You're bringing it to the forefront and celebrating it. You're acknowledging it. You're also acknowledging some of the things that might have been missing in your upbringing that you're able to now, you know, navigate and bring that to the table, where if your parents, like you said, were showing no emotion, you're showing a lot of emotion, or more than was present with your daughter and with your students specifically. So I there's a lot that was said today that has really resonated with me, that has made me think of the main component is loving myself. I'm guilty of giving so much to others that I neglect myself. Whether that be sleep, whether that be food, whether that be the word, whether that be time, et cetera, where I'm guilty of that on so many levels that I would do anything for my family. I would do anything for my friends and my students, that when I'm hurting, I'll push through. One example of that was this past Monday that, given that we didn't record an episode, I really pushed myself to finish the remodeling in my home. So Monday, I couldn't even sit still. My back was hurting. I mean, and I've been putting it off to go get to a chiropractor. So finally it was like the body told me, he's like, yep, you waited too long. Now you got to go. That was just another indicator that I got lost again in finishing and completing and doing what I know I can do. Still not reflecting and sit down, take time for yourself. It's okay to, you know, to rest. It's okay to just sit and be present, or even watch Netflix. Like, you know, all the things that at times we think we got to stay busy, we got to keep going, we got to keep grinding. And hearing you has reminded me, just again, sit down, wake up, read, any professional development for myself, because in return, that makes me better for others.
Yeah.
So Justin, man, any takeaways?
No, man, I think if anything, we're on spring break. A lot of us are on spring break right now, and this would be a great time for you to decompress, not to worry about what didn't happen before you left, not to worry about where you left the music if you are in a place where you are going to UIL concert site reading, but to really decompress, really take in this week of rest, relaxation. If you're married, if you have children, if you are, you know, single by yourself, man, just enjoy those parts of your life. And understand that by enjoying that, it'll help you enjoy and be more authentic when you go back to the workplace. So, no, I enjoyed it, man. I'm spoiled, man. We work together every day, and we have a score episode every day we get to work. So it's really dope, man. It's really dope.
Well, Balaji, man, how can people get in touch with you?
Man, you can contact me on Instagram at Mr_Aseba. On Facebook, I believe I'm Balaji Jola Aseba. I know that's a mouthful, so you know, go to the score notes or go to the notes so you can see the name. You can contact me at bjolaisiba@gmail.com. Twitter is @bjola2. I'm not on social media a lot, but I check it. Like if you DM me, that's fine. But email is probably the best way, along with my Fort Bend ISD email, which hopefully will be in the show notes if you really want to contact me.
Well, man, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you back on the score and bringing in a different perspective and a different conversation that is going to be worthwhile. And if our listeners are on spring break, chill, relax, drink one for me. If you do, this is where take time for yourself, take that school email off your phone. You'll put it back on there when you get back. So Take time for yourself. Yeah. We can't stress that enough, and hopefully you got a little bit of that from the episode today. So have a great day and a great rest of your week.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
This has been another production of The Score. Connect with us on social media at Pod The Score. Send us an email, podthescore@gmail.com, or visit our website, revivalmusicproject.org. If you've enjoyed this episode, do us a huge favor. Rate and review us. This will help us reach even more listeners. Intro music by Justin McLean. The rotation and outro music by Ben Borges. And as always, let's continue to impact these lives through the vehicle of music.